When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to the Crossover NBA Podcast. On this episode, we're going to get into the blockbuster Anthony Davis trade, what it means for the Lakers and the Pelicans, what it means for the Celtics, the odd team out in this equation, and what it means for Kyrie Irving's pending free agency. As always, best way to support this podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts, where you can post a rating or leave a comment. It's easy. It's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. Also, if you like boxing, subscribe to the SI Boxing Podcast. That's hosted by yours truly. That podcast also comes out every single week. Finally, the SI NBA Draft Show is back. We will have a live show on SI.com on draft night. I'll be hosting it and taking you through the entire first round. Former Kings coach Dave Yeager will be there. South Carolina coach Frank Martin will be there. SI college basketball analyst John Rothstein will be there. And SI staff writer Rohan Nadkarni will be there as well. We start at 7:30 Eastern time, and we'll take you all the way through the first round. The show will be available on SI.com and all of SI's social channels. So, on that note, joining me now in studio, SI staff writer, who, as I mentioned, will be part of our draft show tomorrow, Rohan Nadkarni. What's up, Rohan?
Chris, how's it going, man? I was wondering if we were going to take time on this podcast, or is it the next one? I was kind of just hoping we could talk about how our friendship has evolved throughout this basketball season. I figured the finals ending would be a good time to do that, but I didn't hear you mention that in the rundown of what we were going to talk about today.
I didn't, but if you feel comfortable doing that on a separate podcast or on Crossover TV, you should feel free to start without me. go right ahead.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
All right, let's talk about the big news of the week. Over the weekend, on Saturday, Anthony Davis was traded from the New Orleans Pelicans to the Los Angeles Lakers. The gist of the deal is that the Pelicans, they get most of the Lakers' young assets, including Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart. They also get three first-round picks, and they get some considerations down the line. Swap rights in 2023, and the right to one of the Lakers' draft picks in 2024, or 2025. So a lot of draft considerations for the Pelicans in this one is to try to rebuild their team in the post-Anthony Davis future. And the Lakers, they get their man. They get Anthony Davis, one of the top five players in this league, who is now going to be a running buddy of LeBron James. So Rohan, first, your 10,000-foot evaluation of the Anthony Davis trade.
Listen, I've been hammering Rob Pelinka on this podcast, you know, week in and week out. He had to get this deal done. And I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the Lakers. They needed to do this. They really needed Anthony Davis. We've been talking for months how important this summer was for them. You know, their path to superstars wasn't as easy as it seemed. You know, they had these assets. They had the cap space. But we haven't heard a lot of guys outside of Anthony Davis who actually want to play there. So they had to get this done. And I think Rob Pelinka knocked this one out of the park. You know, I'm sure we'll get into the trade package stuff. And I have a lot of thoughts about that. But, you know, first blush, I was sitting in Bryant Park waiting for an Aziz Ansari show on Saturday when the trade happened, and my first thought was the Lakers had to get this done, and I think they deserve credit for actually bringing in Anthony Davis, because for a while it seemed like they might not be able to. There were so many things working against them, just a general league-wide distaste for the Lakers, other teams who wanted to get involved, teams who maybe felt emboldened by what Kawhi Leonard did in Toronto. So the Lakers seem to have a lot of factors working against them for a long time, and I'm impressed they actually pulled it off.
Yeah, they had to get it done, because the moment they signed LeBron James, they operated or agreed to operate on LeBron James's timeline. They agreed to be a team that was seeking a championship in the next 4 years, and not what they had been, which was a team trying to rebuild organically behind young pieces and a young head coach. That was just not the direction that they were going to go. Now, they got their man, and they deserve credit for that. No question. There were some factors working for them, specifically some of the public comments that Rich Paul made in SI recently, you know, lending his name to the all the sourced reports that were out there about how, you know, Anthony Davis only wanted to go to the Lakers or the Knicks, did not want anything to do with the Boston Celtics. So he had that going for him, and he didn't pay a cheap price. I mean, there isn't much more that the Lakers could have thrown in this deal to make it work. They could have tossed, I guess, Kyle Kuzma into this deal, which they're getting a lot of credit for holding on to, and I guess that's somewhat deserved, because Kyle Kuzma, I think, is the right kind of player to play alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis, but everything else is gone. I mean, their roster is now down to 5 players under contract. Their draft considerations are basically going to be controlled by the Pelicans for the next 6 years. So this was a deal the Lakers had to make, but it's not like, Rohan, they got it at a very cheap price.
I understand that. I wrote about this for SI.com because I saw all the conjecture over the weekend. I saw people comparing this to the Nets-Celtics trade from 2013. And listen, David Griffin deserves credit for getting the package he got for the Pelicans, okay? You're never going to kind of come ahead in these superstar trades. The best you can do is just kind of maximize the assets you bring in. So what I'm about to say, I don't want it to sound like I am criticizing the Pelicans for what they did. The Pelicans extracted all that they could. Having said that, in no way, shape, or form do I think the Lakers gave up too much for Anthony Davis. I understand people look at the draft picks. Here's the way I look at this. The Lakers will still have first-round draft picks in 4 of the next 6 years. That's a fact. You know, even with these swaps, whatever, in 4 of the next 6 years, they will have first-round draft picks, including the next 2 years. You know, that 2019 pick that they gave up, that was found money for them, okay? They were expected to have the number 11 pick in the lottery. They get number 4. As soon as they got the number 4 pick, that had Anthony Davis's name written on it. Anthony Davis, not only, I mean, this is what, to me, is the masterful part of this trade. Anthony Davis doesn't just make you a title contender next season. I mean, I think the Lakers are going to be title favorites when the season tips off in October. He gives you LeBron's running mate. He also gives you the guy to build around when LeBron leaves. I mean, Anthony Davis is going to be, what, 29, 30 years old? He's going to be in the middle of his prime when LeBron's contract is over, and you're then in a position to immediately rebuild around him. And they didn't just make a trade that made them title contenders for next season. They got a building block, like you mentioned, a top 5 player who can be there for the next 10, 12 years and really carry the torch for this franchise moving forward. That's a huge deal. I mean, in 2025, even if the Lakers are, you know, middling, let's say LeBron is getting older, they're going to have a chance to reload. I don't think they're going to regret not having their 2025 first-round pick if it means they already have Anthony Davis in tow. I'm not saying they didn't give up a lot, but to me, it's a no-brainer. To me, there's a fine line between just the way the NBA is talked about right now. I think sometimes people are fetishizing assets, and I get it. I understand that it's smart long-term planning to have all these first-round picks, you know, to have flexibility. That's very important. But there's a point where that just doesn't matter anymore. At some point, you need superstars to win. They have 2 of the best players in the league now. To me, that matters more than their long-term flexibility. And part of the conversation that bothers me is we just went through this with Toronto where they went all in on this season and they won a championship. And it was a little bit of a gamble because Kawhi can walk and they broke up a core of a 59-win team. I understand all that. But let's say Kawhi walks and Toronto is forced to rebuild as soon as this summer. There's no one in that city, no one in that franchise who would say this wasn't worth it. If the Lakers win a championship because they brought in Anthony Davis, will it matter that they don't have their 2025, you know, first round pick? I just don't know why we aren't having that same conversation with the Lakers. They're going all in. They want to win a championship. This trade makes them title contenders. To me, that is more important than what happens in the future. Are they?
Well, hold on. A couple things there. I would say that in a broad view, I agree with you that you make this trade no matter what. What you gave up, it doesn't matter. You get Anthony Davis, and having Anthony Davis does protect you from that kind of Nets-like collapse that we saw in Brooklyn when Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett got old too quickly. Anthony Davis is not only a player that should be in his prime for at least the next 6 years, but he's also someone that should serve as a free agent magnet as their cap space eventually opens up somewhat down the line. So you still make that deal, no question. But the idea the Lakers are title contenders right now, I'm still a little iffy on all that. I mean, you brought up Toronto as a comparable. The Raptors were plugging Kawhi Leonard into DeMar DeRozan's slot. That was a 59-win team that basically stayed the same, except the one position they were changing up, they were adding a better player. So I don't think that it's comparable in that sense, because the Lakers right now, they've got five guys. And granted, two of those guys are all NBA talents. One of them might be the best player of all time, who is still a great offensive player, but they still have to fill out the roster. And they've got some cap flexibility. We all know kind of the situation. It's either going to be like $32 million, which is unlikely, or somewhere in the $27 to $23 million type of range, which is more likely. They've got to use that flexibility to sign a bunch of guys. Like, they've got to fill out the roster here, because that's how championships are won. I mean, stars get you to a certain point, and stars are the guys that win end-of-game situations for you, put up big numbers. But it's the Siakams, it's the Van Vliets, it's the midseason deals for Marc Gasol, it's the back end of the bench guys that Toronto utilized to great effect in the finals. That's what helps you win championships. And right now, the Lakers don't have those guys. So I'm not saying they can't figure it out and get those pieces on the roster, but until they're there, I'm not going to anoint the Lakers as the favorites in the Western Conference, much less the favorites to win the whole thing.
Okay, that's fair. That's totally fair. I agree. They're in some ways in a similar position to what they were in last offseason, where they got the star, but now they have to make these next moves just as important, right? You know, these next signings are going to be just as important. And we saw the front office maybe not do a good job with that last year. I will say this. You know, working in Rob Pelinka's favor, we talked about this again on the podcast. He does deserve credit for finding the guys like Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma in the first place. He has shown some aptitude for maybe finding these diamonds in the rough. Can he get an undrafted free agent type, you know, a Fred VanVleet type maybe this offseason? While we're talking about the Lakers this summer, I will say this. I don't know that they should go for the third star. I think the league is going to be shifting a lot this summer. You could argue they already have the best duo in the Western Conference, maybe even the entire league. I think it's certainly in the conversation. I think it's going to be more important for them, like you mentioned, to fill out the roster than to sign someone like Kemba Walker. Can you get someone like Danny Green? Can you get someone like Patrick Beverley? Can you get two of those types of players as opposed to another star? I think that's going to be important for the Lakers. They're going to have to use their mid-level exception wisely. They're going to have to try to get guys on that veteran minimum deal, you know, the James Ennis type players. If they're smart about it, there are routes for them to fill out this rotation, you know, with championship caliber players, with those 3-and-D guys that they didn't do last year. Do we have faith in the front office to do that? I mean, I don't know if we had faith in them to pull off this Anthony Davis trade. So I agree with you. It's not overnight. That's fine. Maybe I need to temper my enthusiasm a little bit. But there are smart routes for them to take. If I'm them, I'm offering Danny Green, you know, $16 million a year and saying, hey, come play here. We're going to be, you know, right back in that championship mix.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at a guy like Danny Green pretty closely. I'd look at a guy like J.J. Redick pretty closely. I'd look at a guy like Malcolm Brogdon pretty closely.
Certainly.
If you can put up enough money to get him away from Milwaukee. But this was a team and a front office that last year thought Lance Stephenson and Rondo and the guys they signed to those one-year deals like JaVale McGee, they thought those were good ideas. They thought that was the right pieces to put alongside LeBron and nobody else, and Lonzo and Ingram and those guys. So I don't know. I mean, I think the easy work has been done. I think getting Anthony Davis from the Pelicans was easier than
putting the pieces around Anthony Davis to make the Lakers a championship contender. I don't know that they're going to have a choice when it comes to how to spend their money. They're probably not going to have max cap space.
Right.
And a max-level free agent, a max-level free agent is not going to sign there in the offseason for less than max money just for the chance to play with LeBron. Even if they did clear max contract space, I saw watching on ESPN, somebody said there that Kawhi is a possibility. I mean, Kawhi, I don't know how clearly to say this. Kawhi is not a possibility for the Lakers. He is a possibility for the Clippers for sure. And he is a possibility for the Raptors given everything that they've accomplished this season. I can't envision a scenario where Kawhi Leonard signs on to play with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Kawhi Leonard is an alpha. I don't believe he's going to be playing for the Lakers next year. And the other guys, whether it's Kemba Walker or Jimmy Butler or Tobias Harris, maybe you can lure them, but you're using every nickel of your available cap space to get them, and I'm not so sure. In fact, I don't think that's the right path to go.
I agree with you there. I think we're going to find out pretty quickly if the Lakers learned from their mistakes or not. We're going to find out pretty quickly if they understood that last summer was a disaster. And I'm with you. I think not having max cap space could be a little bit of a blessing in disguise for the Lakers, because I'm with you. They need to fill out the roster. They need to go seven deep. They need to get those bench guys. They need to get those 3-and-D types that they didn't have last year. So I think those moves are going to be a lot more important. You know, I think that's going to be the make or break. Like you said, the hard decisions, the difficult decisions, who the front office divvies up the money to. But yeah, I think in some ways, hey, if they have $26 million in cap space as opposed to 32, and that means they go out and sign two guys as opposed to one, that's going to be really important. But the way the league is shaping up next season, I think it's going to be better to have two stars of Davis and James's caliber and then a bunch of very capable role players. So it's going to be really interesting. The potential is certainly there. And the front office, I do think, deserves some credit for pulling this off. And I have cautious optimism that they can, you know, fill out the roster properly. But we'll see.
Oh, I think they deserve credit for pulling it off. And I thought the trade was a big win for Rob Pelinka, who needed to get a win. It was a big win for LeBron, who needed another star to play alongside him and didn't really have a path through free agency to get that guy. But now is where it gets really hard. Now is where you need to have a deep front office, a deep organization, and be able to identify the Siakams and the Van Vliets and the back end of the bench guys that you can get with second-round picks or undrafted free agents. That's hard, but that's where the backbone of championship teams are made. All right, let's talk about the flip side of this deal. With the New Orleans Pelicans, they already had the draft rights to Zion Williamson. He's going to be the number one overall pick on Thursday. Now they have a host of young players, basically all of the Lakers' young talent, minus Kyle Kuzma. They've got the fourth overall pick in the draft. They've got a bunch of draft picks moving forward courtesy of this deal. What grade would you give the Pelicans in making this deal for Anthony Davis?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, Chris, because I graded them a B-plus the night the trade happened. I think it's obviously a very good haul for the Pelicans. I think I gave that grade out before we kind of got the particulars of the first-round picks. Here's what I'll say. I'm more interested to see what they do with the number four pick. We've seen, you know, Bradley Beal's name out there. Can they make one more move? Are they going to keep Jrue Holiday, or can they kind of dangle him? I'm a little bit on the fence, actually, about what this means for the Pelicans. I think Zion's going to be great. Ball and Ingram, before last season, I was a little bit higher on them. Now we've both kind of seen them have health issues. We've seen them both still struggle. I think it'll be better for them to be in a situation where they're not playing with a veteran like LeBron and they can kind of grow more organically. The Lakers, before they signed LeBron, really looked to be up and coming. I mean, the second half, a couple years ago, all those young guys were kind of coming into their own. And then that all kind of went out the window once LeBron signed there. But I just don't know if Ball and Ingram have the same star potential as Zion, obviously. They certainly don't have the same star potential as Anthony Davis. I think they could be good players on a good team. I don't know if they'll ever be great players on a contending team, but it's a very, very good start for them. I think they're going to be very fun to watch. If all those guys stay healthy, they're going to play fast and they're going to be fun. But I'm kind of interested to see what they do with this number four pick. Are they going to trade it for a veteran, or are they going to kind of still play for the future? They certainly have that flexibility now. And David Griffin, I think, is the right man in charge. But I don't know if Ball and Ingram necessarily will be the cornerstones of their future as much as Zion will be and whatever they end up doing with that number four pick.
Yeah, I'd give them an A for the deal because for a number of reasons. One, the haul that they got I thought was significant. I think Lonzo Ball outside of that LA microscope and playing in a system like Alvin Gentry is going to run where all he has to do is run the ball up the floor and play up tempo. I think he's going to be better. I think Ingram too in his second year showed some strides. He was playing with LeBron. He had to figure some things out. Just like everybody that winds up playing with an established star has to. I think given more offensive freedom, he's going to be really good in that role. And even Josh Hart, I think, is a nice piece to add to that.
Definitely.
That equation in New Orleans. The reason I give them an A, though, is because they pulled off a deal like this without really having another team making a big-time offer. I mean, my understanding is that the conversations with the Lakers were pretty much the only ones that were as deep as they needed to be to get a deal done. Now, there were conversations with the Celtics, but because of the Kyrie Irving situation, Boston just wasn't willing to make the kind of offer that would have even threatened the Lakers situation or Lakers offer. And in talking to people in Boston the last couple of days, there's a belief that even if they included Jason Tatum in a deal, that this Lakers offer was so strong because of the draft considerations, they're not sure that it would have topped it. Now, I tend to disagree with that because I think an all-in offer from Boston trumps an all-in offer from basically anyone because they can put Tatum, Brown, the future Memphis pick, which mm-hmm, is a huge mm-hmm. asset, three first-rounders in this year's draft. I mean, there's a lot they could have done to get a deal done there. But the Celtics, because of Kyrie, they just weren't as engaged as they were going to be if Kyrie had followed through on his preseason commitment. So having just kind of the Lakers out there as the most significant suitor and to still get this haul back, I think it's a great deal. I think David Griffin earned his paycheck and then some in getting a deal done like this because now he's got Zion, he's got young players. Who knows what he'll do with the fourth pick in the draft? I really don't know. I keep hearing a lot about how this pick is kind of up for auction. I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I think it's available, but it wouldn't surprise me to see the Pelicans use that number four overall pick on draft night and try to find another young piece to add to a roster that's going to begin next season with no pressure. Like, there's no playoff pressure for the Pelicans. All they have to do is, like, look entertaining all season long and show potential, and they're going to be in a good place organizationally.
Definitely, yeah. I just want to clarify again. When I gave the Pelicans that B-plus grade, it was before kind of the details of the first-round picks emerged. Like I said, what they did was they maximized their flexibility. They maximized their opportunities to build this team. As far as losing superstars go, I mean, this has to be probably the best situation I've ever seen a team end up with in terms of they got the number one overall pick in the year that there's a consensus number one, someone who teams are incredibly excited about. They have young players who just as recently as 2 years ago were on an exciting up-and-coming team, and they have options moving forward. Like the number four pick and Jrue Holiday are both really good assets to have, I think, moving forward. So yeah, they're definitely in a good spot, and I'm happy for David Griffin, who was thrust into this wild situation where he's got to make a gigantic decision right off the bat, and I think he did as well as anyone could have expected in this situation.
Yeah, we said going in, or at least I said going in, this was going to be a Herschel Walker type of deal that would involve the most assets ever to return for a player because Davis is 26. He's an all-NBA talent. He's only getting better. I mean, he's just hitting his prime, so it's not surprising that they were able to get this much back. But I think it's a nice carrot to have all those Laker draft picks down the line because even if you don't use them, if you're David Griffin, they can be really valuable trade chips. Look what Boston did with that Nets pick that turned into Kyrie Irving. They effectively traded Colin Sexton for Kyrie Irving. That's basically what it was because Jay Crowder was in that deal. Isaiah Thomas was in that deal. Isaiah has never been the same player he was after that hip surgery, and Jay Crowder didn't work in Cleveland. Needed to go to another system to make it work. And Jay Crowder would have been superfluous in Boston given that Gordon Hayward was there and that, you know, Brown and Tatum were part of that mix. So you can use these kind of nebulous draft picks, these draft picks that deep in the future as real trade chips, because teams might look at the Lakers and say, well, in 2024, they might be a struggling team and they might be willing to give up a lot more thinking that that pick might be top three. I mean, that's what the Cavaliers thought when they made the Kyrie deal. They thought that future Nets pick was going to be a top three pick. It turned out to be eight. So I think that's a good asset to have if you're David Griffin and making a deal to upgrade your roster down the line. All right, let me ask you, though, about the Celtics here, because the Celtics sat this one out, and they've been getting a lot of grief all over social media. You know, a lot of people taking glee, Rohan, in Boston, just kind of sitting there.
Count me in that group.
All right, well, then tell me, should Boston have done anything differently regarding Anthony Davis?
Yes, they should have traded for him. That's what they should have done. It's not even that they should have done something different. Here's why I take glee in it. It's because they've just been like openly pining for this guy for years, and then it just kind of blew up in their face. And we just, every summer we hear about Boston's assets and what it means and what they could do with them and what they could get for them. They sat out Paul George. They sat out Kawhi Leonard. Now they were, you know, whether it was Rich Paul or Kyrie Irving, they got scared out of trading for Anthony Davis. Their last season ended incredibly poorly. I mean, they wildly underperformed expectations, a very disappointing playoff defeat. No one was happy. You had Terry Rozier going on TV and being like, yeah, I was unhappy. I mean, you had the guys grumbling at each other all year long. By all reports, they're probably losing Kyrie Irving. They still have Gordon Hayward, who's working his way back into shape, but is like ended last season as one of the most overpaid players in the league. I don't think they're in a terrible situation. I don't think their future is awful. But it just kind of goes back to what I was saying. It's like sometimes we get so caught up in assets and flexibility that it takes away from the product on the floor. And I think that's what Boston needs to focus on at some point, is cashing these guys in. I understand these picks and stuff are valuable. They've built this team very intelligently. But at the end of the day, their gambles, their risks, they haven't taken the right ones. And we have to credit the front offices that do that. And, you know, Boston, I just think it's like, what are they going to have to show for all of this? It's going to be Al Horford and Gordon Hayward. What are they going to have to show for all of this in the end? Are you willing to put them over the Raptors if they bring Kawhi back or the Sixers next season? You know, where do they go from here? So I just think it's like every year we hear about Boston's assets and the flexibility and what they can do. I mean, this massive haul that they ended up getting from the Nets has resulted in Brown and Tatum, who are both very good, obviously, the good guys to have for the future. They also both took steps back last year. I just think that it's at some point they need to cash in, and they've had superstars who are there for the taking, and whether it was the smart play to do it or not, I mean, you've seen other teams take those risks, and it's worked out for them more so than it has for Boston.
Okay, before I weigh in here, you're saying that you would have traded Jason Tatum in a package for Anthony Davis.
I would have traded Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard, and secondly,
That's not the question. Jason Tatum in a package for Anthony Davis.
This is a good question. Can I say I don't know?
Your whole argument is based on they should have gone all in. What are you talking about? Made an argument.
No.
That they should have done this.
What you're asking is what I take glee in. What I take glee in is people like you who are always talking about
flexibility. Rewind the tape.
Yes.
You just said they should have traded
for Anthony Davis. They should have traded. Yes. I'm willing to go there. They should have traded for Anthony Davis. Sure.
They should have traded Jason Tatum in a package for Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Okay. That's wrong. And that's wrong on like every possible basketball level. They got screwed by whatever happened with Kyrie Irving this year. If Kyrie Irving was happy, they would have traded everything they had to get Anthony Davis and build a team around Davis and Kyrie and probably Gordon Hayward and probably Al Horford. So they were totally screwed by what happened this year. But because they were totally screwed, they went out and did the smart thing. They kept Jason Tatum on their roster. They kept Jaylen Brown on their roster. They kept their flexibility to make a deal down the line.
That's what we say every summer, though. Every summer we hear they did the smart thing.
But this is,
they
hold
kept
on,
their flexibility.
Hold on,
and for
hold,
what? For what? Flexibility
hold on,
for what?
Hold on. This is not a team that is now decimated. This is a team that goes back to being the team they were last year, give or take. Maybe stronger, maybe worse.
Definitely
because Gordon
worse.
Hayward's probably going to be, hold on, Gordon Hayward's probably going to be better next year. I don't know what Terry Rozier is. That's a pretty open-ended question at this point. But they're going to go back to probably being the team they were last year. They've got to bring back Al Horford. That's a critical piece of all this. I think Al Horford wants to stay in Boston. I think they'd like to reduce that base salary some. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know anything really specific on this, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Horford back on a 3-year, $60 million-ish type of deal with the Celtics. But if they do all those things, Rohan, they are still a top four team in the Eastern Conference. And if they do all those things, look at the teams that are sitting above them and look at the problems those teams have in free agency. Kawhi Leonard, if he comes back, the Raptors, hands down, favorite to win the whole thing next year. If he doesn't, there's a chance that the Raptors are not a playoff team next year because they'll rebuild that entire roster, maybe trade some of their veterans, and go in a different direction. You've got Milwaukee, which is going to lose some key pieces. Brook Lopez, it's really hard to bring him back given the financial constraints. Malcolm Brogdon, somebody's going to make him a big offer in restricted free agency. Chris Middleton, he made it clear, there ain't no hometown discount to go back to Milwaukee. They're going to have to pay him the max. Their roster is going to be a hurt after this season. And then you have Philadelphia, who the Sixers are going to have like the richest payroll ever if they decide to bring back Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. And I've been talking to a few people. I don't believe either one of those guys is going to give Philadelphia a discount in terms of number of years. I think both those guys are going to want the 76ers to pony up over a 5-year deal. So if the Sixers do that, the rest of their flexibility goes out the window as well. Will they be able to bring back a J.J. Redick or somebody else, some of their other free agents that are out there? I'm just saying, the Celtics, they had an opportunity to create a surefire championship window, and they don't have it now. But they're still bringing back an extremely talented team that if they can just put last year out of their minds, they've got a chance to make a run at the Eastern Conference next year.
So what you're saying is they just have to ignore the reality of last season. Here's what bothers me. Is how many years can they kick the can down the road? How many years can they play the flexibility card before it just doesn't matter anymore? They're going to move forward with the core of Al Horford and Gordon Hayward after years of, we're going to get Anthony Davis. We're going to, you know, we're players for Kawhi. We're players for every big player on the trade market. They just keep kicking the can down the road, and at some point you have to cash in. I understand that all these teams have their own issues. I understand that all these other teams are kind of facing these big decisions, but that doesn't let Boston off the hook for every year. It's always about the flexibility. It's always about what they can do. It's always about the potential of what they can do. It's never about what have you done. The Kyrie move backfired. I don't think, you know, I understand the organization doesn't shoulder the entire blame for that. There's no way in this note this guy could be as mercurial as he is. I don't think even they thought after he said, I'm going to resign here, they would have expected him to now be ghosting the team, as people are reporting. Just what bothers me, what I take glean, is every year we've heard that they did the smart thing. They still have the flexibility. They have these pieces that can turn into this, you know, X, Y, and Z. It just hasn't worked out for them so far. I'm not saying it never will, but at some point, that flexibility is going to run out. You can only kick the can down the road so many times. Players like Anthony Davis, you know, don't become available. Like you said, you know, the biggest superstar haul ever. Why? Because guys like him just don't hit the market often enough. So it's tricky for them. I understand if you're a Celtics fan why you're like, you know, why someone would feel like, hey, this team's not decimated. You know, we can still make these moves. But it's just been for 5 years now, it's always been about the flexibility, what they can do. And they still haven't managed to cash in. And I think they're going to take a step back next season, to be honest, especially if they lose Irving.
We're going to get into Kyrie Irving in a second. But if they bring back everyone and they make some type of minor deal that fixes one of their weaknesses and they use all the draft picks they have, maybe not all of them, but you know, they got three in this week's draft. They don't want to use three. They don't need three young guys on this roster. But if they can bring back the core of this team, including Al Horford, I think they can be a better regular season team next year. They won 49 games this past season, which was a 3-year low for this team. They were over 50 in the two previous ones. I think they can be a better regular season team next year. Now, I do think you need stars to win championships, and Kyrie Irving, for all his warts, is a bona fide star and a closer in this game. So in that sense, I think they're less a championship contender, but they're still in a good place. Now, the Lakers, They had to make the Davis deal. They were in the same position that Oklahoma City was in 2 years ago and the Raptors were in last year. Oklahoma City 2 years ago needed to make a deal because they had to convince Russell Westbrook that he wanted to be there. So they made the deal, and lo and behold, within a couple of months of that deal happening, Russell Westbrook signs his name to a long-term contract extension. The Raptors, they knew what they were. They were a middle-of-the-pack team that had plateaued. That team was never going further than, say, the conference finals. They just were what they were with DeMar DeRozan. So they rolled the dice and wondered if Kawhi would get them all the way there, and he did. The Celtics are not in that situation, Rohan. They are not. Of course, it's frustrating to hear every single free agent or every single top-tier trade asset come up, hear about the Celtics coming in and being a part of that deal, but that's the reality. They have two high-level young players in Tatum and Brown. I think Tatum is a much better prospect than Jaylen Brown, but I think Jaylen Brown could turn into a good two-way player who gives you 18 and 7 every single night. You've still got Gordon Hayward, who was 2 years removed from being an all-star, and after having a full offseason to get better, could still be close to the old Gordon Hayward. And Horford, who is like the most remarkably consistent player for what he is that I've seen in a long time. This is still a team in a good place with the ability to get better because of what they have. I just don't think they should have gone crazy and traded for Anthony Davis just because they've been just so zoned in on him for the last couple of years.
I just think their options are dwindling. And if their plan is to move forward with a Horford, Hayward, superstar duo, that's not a bad team, but it doesn't scream championship, contender to me also. I think they can keep building, but
you keep saying Horford, Hayward duo. It's not. It's a Tatum and Hayward, or Tatum and Brown duo. It's those two guys who have the higher ceiling who need to develop in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll see. We'll just see. I just think it's like every single summer there's this conversation about the Celtics and the flexibility, and they're, they have all these big grand plans and they're in on all these guys, and they've just been so gun shy over and over again, and it's yet to result in anything spectacular. So I'm not saying they're decimated. It's just going to, I'm starting to question a little bit. I'm starting to lose faith a little bit because it hasn't resulted in anything special yet.
It has not, but we'll see what happens if they can. I think the big question is, can Terry Rozier be rehabilitated into the guy we saw in last year's playoffs, or did last season change everything, both for Terry Rozier as a player and for what Boston thinks about him? I mean, Danny Ainge said publicly that he still loves Terry Rozier, and I think as a starter, Terry is still a pretty good prospect at that position. Can't do the things that Kyrie does, but I think that's the biggest question. If they can get Al Horford signed to a multi-year deal, then it becomes, what is Terry Rozier to us? Is he the guy that we want to put alongside these other players, or do we have to go out there and get creative and try to find a way to get Mike Conley in a Celtics uniform or somebody else along those lines? All right, let me finish with Boston and Kyrie Irving in particular. Let's dig into this for a second there. Kyrie, a free agent to be, is going to be a free agent come July 1st. All indications, Rohan, are that he is going to leave the Celtics and go to one of the New York teams. I've talked to two different people who said as much, that Kyrie would go to one of the New York teams. And I had one person tell me that it's going to be the Brooklyn Nets. So it would at this point be a miracle to me if Kyrie Irving is back in a Celtics uniform. Now, I think there's a lot to unpack with what happened last year, but this was such a precipitous change, or such a steep fall for Kyrie Irving, from the guy that in October addressed the fans, said, I plan on coming back. Even in, I think it was November, December, on one of his trips to New York, he said something along the lines of, before I decided to come back to Boston, this would have been a place that I wanted to play. I'm paraphrasing there a little bit. And now here we are, where there's virtually no chance that I think that we see Kyrie Irving back in Boston. How do you think we got here?
So, first of all, as much as I just, kind of crapped all over the Celtics in that last bit, I will say, the unfortunate part was they made a smart trade for Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving just happens to be one of the most unpredictable personalities in the NBA. I think how we got here is Kyrie just being Kyrie. I mean, what have I been saying this whole time is, like, don't trust anything this dude says until he signs his name to a piece of paper. And I think that's just what we got here. I think his loyalty shift, his want shift, which is fine. He's entitled to that. He's won a championship. He wants to play out his career the way he wants to. I don't know if it was just because, you know, Boston kind of had this dual timeline thing going on with the veterans and the young guys, that Kyrie just kind of got over that situation and he wants to play on, maybe it's a more veteran team. I don't know, but I don't think Brooklyn is that. Maybe he wants young guys he can control more. I don't know what it is. And I think that's what we got here is no one understands what Kyrie Irving's motivations are right now. He's already a huge star. I don't think he needs a big market. You know, he's already got the Christmas Day Nike commercial and this and that. So I think how we got here is no one understands his motivations. And I think the Celtics are just kind of falling victim to that right now. If I'm the Nets, I've been working all these years to get cap room. Is Kyrie the guy I want to hitch my wagon to? I don't even know. I think it would have made sense for these New York teams to go after Kyrie if it meant you were getting Kevin Durant. Also, obviously that's complicated now, but I just think that the reason all this is happening is because no one in the world right now seems to understand what Kyrie Irving's motivations are.
Yeah, look, one thing that I'll never begrudge a player is if they just want to live in a certain location. Kyrie's from Northern New Jersey. If he just wants to live in New York, I get it. I mean, we've all moved places that we want to be professionally. I don't really begrudge him for that. However, if I'm Brooklyn, if it's Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, I get that. Even Durant's injury, there's going to be a handful of teams ready to pay Kevin Durant for 4 years just to get him for three. It's a fait accompli at this point. So if Kevin Durant says to Brooklyn, I want to come there, I want to play with Kyrie Irving in 2020, I get it. But if Kevin Durant winds up signing with the Knicks and Kyrie Irving winds up going to the Nets by himself and they let go of D'Angelo Russell as a byproduct of that, I don't really get that. I don't really understand that, because the Nets right now are basically Boston light, right? Like they
are
a young team that is on the rise, has some good young pieces, has a good young guard like the Celtics had with Rozier when Irving was hurt last year, have a coach who I think is kind of a facsimile of Brad Stevens. I mean, they're both developmental-minded coaches. I don't really understand the fit at all. So basically what it boils down to is if it's two players that the Nets are getting, and even if it's not Kevin Durant, if you're getting Kyrie Irving and like Tobias Harris
or Jimmy Butler,
I get that. I mean, I'm not so sure about Jimmy Butler. I'm not sure how they play together, but I mean, I know they're friendly, so maybe that's possible. If it's two players, I get it. But if it's just Kyrie, I really don't, and I don't know how that ends well for Brooklyn.
I think I agree with you 100%. I think the reason you signed Kyrie at this point is because you think he's a magnet for a second star. You know, that's a conversation I've had with other guys we work with. Is him alone? If him alone on the Nets, I think it's just you get a slightly worse version of what the Celtics were last season. Again, unless Kyrie somehow magically falls in love with this young core and is basically nicer to them than he was the Celtics guy, maybe you have something successful. But I think the reason you signed Kyrie is so you can get in a second star, because I don't think him alone is going to lead you to a championship or a deep playoff run even necessarily. And I don't think the Celtics have kind of the same infrastructure that Boston had last season to kind of keep everything together. So I'm with you 100% there. I think the Kyrie Irving signing only makes sense insofar as you're getting a second guy to go with him. Otherwise, I'm with you. I'd rather roll the dice on kind of D'Angelo Russell, who's younger, who I think embodies what Brooklyn's been trying to build these last few years, and see if you can kind of bring in another guy next to him. But if you sign Kyrie and that's it, I don't know that that gets you to where the Nets have been building toward.
No, and, you know, it just, if it's Kyrie and Durant, next year is going to be rough. That's kind of one of those,
true,
you know, just deal with it. Get through it and figure it out if you're Brooklyn. But at least you can have the carrot of Kevin Durant coming back at age 32 and opening up maybe a championship window that lasts 2 or 3 years with the Nets in Brooklyn. But if it's just Kyrie, I just don't understand it. Last thing about Kyrie, the Lakers, we talked about them and their available cap space. Do you think it should even be a consideration for Kyrie to go back to the LeBron James, reunite, team up with the Lakers with LeBron? And if, let's say hypothetically the Lakers can clear max cap space for next summer, however they decide to do it. Should Kyrie Irving be a consideration for the Lakers, and should Kyrie consider the Lakers?
I think Kyrie should consider the Lakers. I think he should consider all his options. I don't think that's the right move for the Lakers. I don't think you You're already going to, first of all, Frank Vogel, poor Frank Vogel has already got to deal with this situation with Anthony Davis, only five players on the roster. You're going to give him Kyrie Irving also, Jason Kidd. I just think that's too many personalities, too many wild cards. I think that is the potential to go south quickly. I think the Lakers' focus has got to be building a complete roster instead of just going star hunting at this point. So if I'm Los Angeles, I'm cool on the idea of Kyrie. And, it, you know, Kyrie should obviously consider whatever he wants, but I don't think that's the right move for the Lakers or both parties, frankly.
You know, I would disagree, though. I think for both sides, I don't think it's going to happen first and foremost, but for both sides, it makes a weird type of sense. I mean, Kyrie's proven that he can play successfully next to LeBron James, which not everybody can. Like, he's proven that he's been good. He's very close with Anthony Davis, as we've all learned over the last couple of years. So from a basketball perspective, it makes sense. And for Kyrie Irving, LA might be the one place where he can go and just kind of be himself and be in an environment that suits him. One of the reasons that Kyrie had a problem with Brad Stevens, you know, during his time there was Brad Stevens is a very process-oriented guy. He's a guy that believes in the value of the regular season, in getting better, in building towards the postseason. Kyrie's not that guy. You know, Kyrie came from Cleveland where they treated the regular season like it was an annoyance as much as anything else. So you go to L.A. and you pair with LeBron, all of a sudden you kind of have that same dynamic back where you can just kind of coast and do what you want during the regular season and flip a switch and be part of a team in the postseason. That's the problem, I think, that Kyrie's going to have if he goes to Brooklyn, because Kenny Atkinson treats the regular season the same way Brad Stevens does. He's going to have the same type of dynamic in the locker room with the coach anyway that he dealt with and dealt with poorly in Boston. So I think if all things were equal, if the money was there for Kyrie and the Lakers had enough of an infrastructure to like sign him and fill out their roster, I think it makes a ton of sense. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Chris, I just want you to know that even though Kyrie has been ghosting the Celtics, I would never ghost you.
Yeah, well, that's lovely. I'm glad we can put that into the universe and end with that. Rohan, always appreciate it, man. We will see you on the draft show Thursday night, SI.com, 7:30, and across all the social channels as well. Thanks, as always, my man, for joining me.
Yep, sounds good, Chris. Talk to you then.
All right, so the NBA draft is just a day away. No better time to check in with SI.com NBA draft analyst Jeremy Wu. He'll be over at the Barclays Center on draft night, and I'm sure eager to get draft night over with. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, man, just, you know how this week goes. It's just crazy. You know, you hear one thing, you hear another thing, and, you know, you're just, like, stuck in your phone the whole time. So just...
So you go to the draft, and I went for a number of years. I see almost no value in being at the draft. Like,
yeah.
Do you get value out of actually being in that room?
I don't mind it, because I like that it puts you a little bit ahead of the TV. Sometimes you can talk to people who are there and find out what's going on. Apparently, I'm in the background of the ESPN commercial right now that has Ben Simmons in it. Someone texted me and told me that. I haven't seen it, but, you know, so you get some airtime out of it. So, you know, that's really the main reason I just want to be on camera.
I remember just being there. I remember being there for years and looking, like, just following the eyes of the agents who are sitting at the table with the players to kind of get a read on, like, if they were looking in the crowd to indicate that their guy would be going in a certain slot or who they were talking to. It's like lip reading sometimes. You know, standing there watching the guys at that table. It's also a college head coach's, like, it's a college head coach's porn, really, being there. Like, if you've got a guy, if you're a coach like, you know, Kentucky has over the years or Duke or any of the other coaches, you always see, like, Calipari going from table to table of his guys. It's, like, a great opportunity for college coaches to just kind of remind the national audience that they develop guys that turn into lottery picks.
Yeah, exactly. The whole scene is kind of interesting, and you know, being able to kind of, like you said, like read the body language of the whole green room is always sort of an interesting process. But I mean, half the time I'm buried in my laptop because I have to always do the quick reactions and stuff. So but I like being there. And I think at this point I'm just used to it. Like I'm used to just working amid the chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll be over there. We'll be a little bit further uptown across into Manhattan doing the SI.com draft show on draft night, which everybody can watch on all the SI social channels, on SI.com. It's going to be everywhere. We've got Dave Yeager will be a part of it. Frank Martin, the head coach of South Carolina, he's going to be a part of it. We'll also have John Rothstein, our college basketball insider. He's going to be a part of it as well. So check that out, 7:30 Eastern time on SI.com. All right, let me just ask you, Jeremy, here quickly. The latest buzz, I mean, tell me who is gaining the most attention right now, good and bad.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing today is, you know, Darius Garland is going to work out for the Knicks this week, ESPN reported. And so then that's sort of, you know, now there's some discussion about, you know, what that means, you know, for the first few selections, if that means anything at all. So, I mean, you know, the situation with Garland has come up in terms of guys who are sort of rising. I mean, I think Nick Claxton has been generating some buzz in terms of, you know, he may go higher than people think. But other than that, it hasn't been super, super crazy. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just how is the top, you know, we know who the first 9 or 10 guys are going to be, but it's just, you know, what's up with the trades, you know, the Pelicans, what are they going to do with number four? All those things are going to impact, you know, who goes where. And so while we know who the guys are, we don't know who the teams are going to be.
Yeah, the Garland news was interesting because I think all along people have felt the top three was almost locked in, right? I mean, Zion, Ja Morant, R.J. Barrett. Now, is it possible, do you think, that we see R.J. Barrett fall out of the top three? I mean, could Darius Garland slide in there at this point?
I mean, it would surprise me. I mean, I think the situation that I think is possible is I think it isn't absurd to think Memphis might pivot. I mean, I don't, you know, as of last week, I don't think they had officially made a decision. I mean, I know Morant's visit there went well. But I do think it hasn't ever been a concrete decision on Memphis's end. I mean, I still think the expectation is that they'll take Morant, but if they do take Barrett, then I think that puts into play, you know, the Morant goes to three, Garland is there. I mean, it seems to me like the Knicks are doing due diligence and just making sure that they have some option, you know, with that. I mean, also it could be that they're trying to up the trade value of that third pick. I don't know. But... you know, it seems like, you know, there could be some, you know, late. I don't know if it changes, but that's, you know how this time of year is. You know, people want to put all these things out for other reasons, and I think that's sort of what we're seeing.
Yeah. What's your read on Barrett? Because it feels like we know a lot about Zion at this point, franchise player, whether it's as a four-man, five-man, small ball, whatever. Ja Morant, he looks like a franchise point guard cut out of that Russell Westbrook mold. What about Barrett? Do you look at him as a franchise forward? I mean, his scoring seems to be his strongest attribute.
I've never viewed him as a true, like, franchise talent type guy. I mean, that's not to say he can't be very good. I always say this, and it sounds like I'm bashing Barrett, and I don't mean it that way. I've always been more on the realistic side with him, where, you know, there's just something to his game. It's not, you know, he makes the right reads and he makes the right plays, but it's not like, you know, sometimes when the very best players have this just sort of thing you can't put your finger on, and it's like the creative quality, it's the improvisational quality. And with Barrett, you know, I mean, he can make passes and he can score, but he does have this tunnel vision aspect, and it's a decision-making thing. And, you know, to some extent, you know, having done this for a while, you know, you're watching guys when they're teenagers and watching them progress in the NBA. I mean, to some extent, you kind of are who you are. And I think the question is, you know, I believe RJ, I know he works hard, he's going to get the most out of his talent, but then for me, the difference between him being a star and being just another good player is, at the end of the game, you know, how does he refine his decision making? How much better can his shooting get? And these are all questions to me that are relevant. You know, so for me, it's close between him and Culver, 3-4. But also, I think Zion and Morant are, you know, to me, clearly above RJ in my mind.
So the Lakers moved off that number four pick in the Anthony Davis trade. New Orleans has it, and there's a lot of reports out there about the Pelicans shopping it, maybe not being all that enamored with it, preferring to add a veteran to that roster. What does that tell you about the value of the number four pick in the draft?
Yeah, you know, I think right now it's pretty clear there is a market for that pick. I know teams are, you know, calling about it. I know, you know, I think that was probably part of why it was attractive in the trade package. You know, as far as veterans go, I don't know what you can really get for it. I mean, the fact remains is, you know, it's the first pick in sort of a tier, if you will, of guys that are not that far apart in terms of talent. So the way it is valuable is that there are teams who are picking below number four, you know, who have specific interest in some of these guys and might want to come up. And so I think that's probably where the market is. I mean, you saw the report, you know, with Atlanta maybe trying to come up with 8 and 10. That's something we've kind of alluded to over the last couple of weeks, Atlanta trying to package those picks to come up. From what I understand, Atlanta has been the most aggressive team trying to get up to the 3, 4, 5, you know, with 8, 10, and they also have 17. So they have some ammo here. But, you know, certainly there's a market for those picks, and I think that's probably the next thing that has to settle out before, you know, the rest of the draft can unfold.
Yeah, what do you think Atlanta might be looking at there? I mean, My understanding of Travis Schlenk and the kind of players he likes, they're Trae Young type of players. They're just, you know, sort of versatile scorer types that fit in alongside that fit kind of the mold of what Steph and Klay are, you know, when Travis was out in Golden State as an assistant GM there. What do you think they might be looking at 3-4 if they're trying to move up?
Yeah, well, you know, I think if they're coming to 3, you know, it's pretty clear they're coming to get Barrett. You know, that's the only person you have to go that high to get, and they don't need Morant because they have Trae Young. So, you know, I think that's what you can read from that is that, you know, there has to be interest, some degree of serious interest in Barrett. You know, if you want Culver, you don't have to go up to 3. You can go to 4, right, most likely. And, you know, I mean, those are the players. I mean, DeAndre Hunter frequently comes up with Atlanta, but I don't think they would need to get to 3 to get him. You know, maybe they feel like they have to get in front of Cleveland to take him if they go to 4. But those are the three names I'd watch: Barrett, Culver, and Hunter. I don't know if they can get up to 3. You know, I don't know what the Knicks plan to do with that. I don't know. You know, in terms of this trade stuff, you know, this is always the type of thing you're going to hear. But from Atlanta's perspective, I mean, those have to be the three guys that are in play if they come up.
So, you know, if Atlanta has to keep those picks, they're among a couple of teams that have multiple first-round picks. The Celtics have 3 in that first round as well. Is this viewed as a good draft to have multiple first-round picks in? Or, you know, I know Boston's trying to get away from some of those picks, but that may just be just because they just don't have room for these guys. I mean, they can't keep adding young players to the roster. But is this viewed as a draft that there's high value in having multiple first-rounds?
I think it's all reactive. It's like a chain reaction because, you know, it's just the biggest thing with this draft is so many teams are kind of across the board and so many players that – you know, if you move up or down, maybe the guy you thought was going to be there is gone, and you just don't know. And that's sort of, if you have to describe the nature of the draft in one way, it's just, you know, because there's not a ton of, like, elite talent beyond the guys who we, you know are going to be at the top. It sort of casts some uncertainty over the rest of it all the way down to the back of the first round. So, I mean, I think it's always good to have multiple firsts. The question is, what can you get out of it? And I think Atlanta is, you know, on one hand, you know, maybe you would rather take 8 and 10 and take 2 shots. But also, if you look at their roster, they're not going to roster all these rookies, right? I mean, they had a good draft last year. They have guys they're trying to bring along. So from Atlanta's perspective, if you have 8 and 10, why not come up and try to get a guy you really like instead of just taking 2 guys you don't know how it's going to fit? So I think that's probably the rationale there. I mean, you know, Atlanta, Boston, I mean, these teams, you know, no one really wants to roster 3 rookies. So, you know, I expect there will be action.
Yeah, I do as well. Cam Reddish is a guy that I've been kind of watching pretty closely over the last few weeks. I mean, it seems like he could be a guy that climbs even in the draft. What's the buzz on Cam Reddish right now?
Yeah, I think ultimately he'll go somewhere between 8 and 10. I mean, I think there's probably an outside chance he could fall out of the top 10. I don't know if that's likely, but it depends what happens with the Atlanta picks. I mean, the sense I get is he won't, like, I think if Atlanta really wanted him at 8, they could just take him at 8. Like, I think he'll make it to 8. And maybe Atlanta, you know, moves one of the picks. Maybe they move 8 and 17, and they keep 10, and then they can get Reddish at 10. Because I know there's some, you know, mutual interest with him in Atlanta, you know, if they keep those later picks. But, yeah, certainly he's one of the guys who's interesting just because, you know, you look up and down, there's not a ton of potential star power. I think everyone can agree he's one of the guys where if he ever put it all together, you know, could be one of the best players in this draft, but you know there's enough trepidation from team to team with the season he had. You know, questions about just his makeup competitively that he has to answer, just based off that, and also dating back to high school. So, and that's reflected in sort of where he's at right now. I mean, like it, you know, you could justify taking him at 5 if you're Cleveland, but I don't know if I would do it there. Like they might, you know, if you look at him later, and maybe they move down and they take him, right? So. You know, he's been tricky to peg. I ultimately think he probably will go in the 8 to 10 range. Someone will do it. But again, if Atlanta, all right, so say Atlanta trades up, whoever they trade up with comes down and gets 8 and 10. Well, if that team doesn't like Reddish and the Wizards don't like Reddish, then he goes to 11, 12, and then suddenly he's in that next range. So I think still some wide variance for him going into the draft.
You know, speaking of wide variance, a guy like Bol Bol, whose name comes up a lot and everybody's familiar with the last name, of course, because of his family, but what's his range right now? Is there a big variation there as well?
My guess would be his range is somewhere between the first Boston pick at 14, and I'm not saying they'll do it, but that's probably where the earliest I can see it happening. Probably that first Boston pick down to like the mid-20s. I mean, it's wide. From what I understand, you know, all the teams that read his workout last week did get his medical. I don't think that his agency is doing anything to sort of, I think they've realized that, you know, the interest in him isn't so high that they can really control it. They're just going to have to let everybody make their own call. So, you know, I do think someone will gamble maybe in that late teens range. You know, I think most of those teams have access to the medical now, so they'll have to make their own judgment. But, you know, he was a guy, Bull, coming into the year that I was not super high on, and I still, my stance is ultimately that, you know, if it was me, gun to my head on the clock, I probably would let someone else take him. Like, I probably wouldn't do it. But I'm sure teams are talking through this, like, what if we do come up and he's there? You know, how do we treat that? My guess is someone takes a shot, because you might as well. But
why were you not super high on him?
Yeah, well, you know, they played a couple games. Oregon was out here at MSG for a couple games, and I had seen him play in high school. And, like, some of the stuff you hear dating back with him has always just been, you know, how much does he love basketball? Granted, you know, you hear that with a lot of bigs. But, you know, that came up a lot with Bull. You know, how much does he really care? Does he enjoy the lifestyle of being a basketball player, or does he really want to be great? And then, again, you're watching him, and these other questions come into play where it's just, you know, how strong is he? You know, he's 2'10", 7'2". You know, what is the role? You know, how many minutes can you shoulder being that big? I mean, really, if you just look at it, how many guys who are 7 feet or above or can really play 30 minutes a game in the NBA anymore? It's not a high number. So just using that as a basic parameter, you know, the threshold for him to clear to become a legitimate starting center who can play, stay healthy and play 30-ish minutes a game, it's a really high threshold for him to clear. You know, he can block shots, he can shoot threes, but it's just, he's a weird player. I don't think Oregon even always knew how to use him, and that's not anyone's fault. It's just, he's a unique player. And so if you take him, I hope you have a plan for how to utilize him, right? But, you know, if you're taking him and just hoping he's like a, I mean, here's a role comparison. Brook Lopez is like a center who shoots threes. Sure, but Lopez is also really strong and does other things. So, you know, there's so many questions and such a wide range of outcomes for him, even if he does stay healthy. And I think that's what teams are trying to decide for themselves. And that's, you know, the risk-reward thing is going to be different depending on where you are and, you know, what your situation is.
All right, so guys that you do like, especially ones that are kind of outside of that top 10 range, that in that draft kind of sleeper category, give me a couple of them.
Yeah, I really do like Goga Bitadze. I have him as the you know, top international guy ahead of Sekou Doumbouya. Just for me, I mean, I think he's a pretty safe pick. Granted, I haven't seen him play in person, but, you know, I've watched a lot of tape on him. Just looking at his overall situation, I mean, he was so productive at a high level in Europe. I mean, not a lot of teenagers are, you know, starting in the EuroLeague and actually producing, and he's doing that. And I think that's a huge indicator just in terms of his readiness. And I think he can get stronger. I like how physical he is. He can shoot threes. You know, to me, he's the best center in the draft, and I would probably take him. You know, his range probably starts at 10. I would probably take him at 10, but I think it's probably more likely he falls, you know, in that next group. But he's a guy who I think might be, you know, a little bit undervalued. But, you know, you've seen European centers like him kind of succeed. So he's a guy I like. I think I mentioned, I mean, Nick Claxton is a name that comes up a lot. I like him too. He's grown on me from Georgia. I mean, he was good at the combine. Apparently he's been working out really well for teams. And if you look at, you know, look at how Pascal Siakam really changed the game for Toronto in the playoffs as a sort of a big guy who can handle the ball, who can defend. I mean, I think that's the idea with Claxton. Not that he's going to be that good, but, you know, how often are you going to find a 6'11 guy who can actually handle the ball? And I think in his workouts, he's starting to convince teams that, hey, maybe I can be a power forward, not just be a center, and really expand that skill set. So I think you'll see someone take a chance on him. I think that's an interesting player to take because he can guard so well and, you know, on the perimeter for his size. And I think he's just really tapping into what he can be. So to me, he's one of the most interesting, you know, mid-first-round projects.
All right, so when it comes to guys that have biggest question marks, and I guess Bull Bull would kind of fit that category, but are there other guys out there that particularly scare you with the question marks and the red flags they have?
So, I mean, we talked about Bull. I mean, Romeo Langford is a guy who I have been worried about for most of the season. I just, you know, I know he has a, you know, strong pedigree or whatever, you know, coming dating back to high school, and I, you know, I respect that obviously, but, you know, for him, I've always just had concerns. You know, I know he played hurt, you know, his right wrist was banged up, and they're saying it affected his shooting, but, you know, I never thought he was a great shooter, you know, going into the season. I think that was a question mark, and then, you know, with him, you know, I question, you know, how skilled he is off the dribble. And, you know, I think sometimes, and I wrote this earlier, like, I think last month, and it's like sometimes we look at a big athletic wing and we just kind of like assume that that's going to be a valuable player, and we don't look hard enough at, you know, some of the other things. Like, for example, like Stanley Johnson a few years ago, you know, he's had, you know, a tough time, you know, in the NBA, and, you know, there's been some other stuff with him. But You know, he's another guy who probably ultimately was not as skilled as we hoped, and that ended up being a stumbling block for him. So, you know, Langford's a guy I'm a little concerned about. I mean, teams, you know, Kevin Porter comes up a lot as one of those big, you know, interesting risk guys, and he's a guy who I do have some optimism with, and I would probably do it if I had multiple picks, if I could chance it in the teens or whatever. But those are some of the guys who I think, you know, are going to have, you know, potential to fall or, you know, end up being stable in the back lottery. But you know, those are two names that I would look at.
To finish kind of back at the top of the draft, when you look at Zion, do you see it like a can't-miss guy? I mean, there are some guys that come along, whether it's LeBron or Anthony Davis or, I mean, there's a handful of others that just look like can't-miss types of guys. Do you look at Zion in that same vein?
I think yeah, with the caveat being, you know, if he can stay healthy for his whole career, then yeah. I mean, you know, the counterpoint would be, well, we've never seen anyone exactly like him. Like, how do we project that? But I just think that, you know, Zion is – the intangibles factor is so strong. He's a smart player. I don't think people have made enough just about his ability to just sort of play with others, and he enjoys that. You know, he's not a selfish player. He just produces. He doesn't necessarily need to be fed. He just produces. And, you know, I think particularly now that we know where he's going to go, and we know that New Orleans is going to be armed with a ton of assets. They have a ton, you know, in their pocket. They have smart people making decisions now for the team. And, you know, I think we should be even more optimistic about that marriage, just knowing that, you know, every decision they make is going to be aimed with, you know, how do we maximize this guy and how do we get the most out of him? Because the talent's not in question. So, you know, I mean, with any player, there's risk. And I think, you know, you hope that they'll be able to keep him healthy, and at his size, you know, I think you can probably expect him to get banged up. You know, he plays so hard, and I think that, you know, that he's going to have to at some point figure out, you know, the right balance, right? Because that's the thing, is he's always playing balls to the wall. I love it, but also, you know, come on, man, like, be careful. You know, you don't need to jump that high all the time. Like, you know, you it's one of those guys, like, you know, with Derrick Rose, sometimes you'd watch him and he'd just go up and you'd worry about him, like, landing, and that ultimately he got hurt. So, again, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's just, for me, I get some of those flashbacks where I'm like, oh, like, I got, you know, and it just, like, you grit your teeth. But I do believe in Zion wholeheartedly, for sure.
That team, if nothing else, is going to be really fun to watch next year with Alvin Gentry coaching it and Lonzo Ball running as the point guard and Zion and whatever else they add in the draft. I mean, they're going to be entertaining, to say the least. Jeremy, enjoy the night, man. Hopefully it goes well for you over at the Barclays Center. And thanks for joining me here at the podcast.
Of course, man. Anytime.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.